While we've made incredible advances in therapeutic options and supplements, it's really about integrating these with everyday habits to support a long and a healthy life.
Investing in early stage companies focused on longevity products and services offer high potential returns as the market rapidly expands.
This is Business Insights, a podcast brought to you by global strategy consultancy Roland Berger.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Health Podcast of Roland Berger.
I'm Thilo, I'm a pharmacist, also senior partner with Roland Berger in the Munich office. And I have a very special guest today. Nina Ruger, biologist, most of all, but also a well-known German TV anchor and author of many books related to longevity and podcast and the platform called Stay Young, will help us to understand better the opportunities in longevity. Welcome, Nina.
Oh, welcome. Thank you so much, Thilo.
It's such a pleasure to be here and discuss such an exciting and important topic.
Absolutely, Nina. As both of us are deeply invested in understanding the future of health and longevity, today we're diving into some of the most promising recent developments in the area. From groundbreaking therapeutic options to early stage research, up to instantly available supplements and lifestyle choices we all have. We're also tied to insights from our recent work on the Future of Health 5 study at Roland Berger and some of the topics you have covered in your own books and Spotify series. So let's get started. Nina, over the past years, we've been seeing a surge of interest in existing medications being repurposed for life extension. In total, we are counting at least 12 different technology platforms which are currently researched for their potential in aging. These include very well-established drug classes such as GLP-1 agonists, cell and gene therapies, but also drugs targeting very aging-specific pathways such as mTOR inhibitors, senolytics, telomerase activators, agents doing cell reprogramming and NAD plus boosters, just to name a few. The first group, GLP-1 agonists, which were originally developed for diabetes, then now boosting in obesity, are now being studied for the potential to not only control blood sugar, but also life expansion. What is your take on this?
A great topic. GLP-1 agonists like semaglutide and liraglutide are definitely fascinating. Their ability to regulate metabolism has implications far beyond diabetes and obesity, as they seem to have a positively influence on things like cardiovascular diseases, kidney health, liver health, neurological disorders. I've covered this in my podcasts, and though we are still in the early stages of truly understanding the long-term impact on aging, the results are promising.
Would you please quickly explain how they work?
Okay, our receptors for the natural GLP-1 are located in the pancreas, brain, stomach, and intestines, also liver and fat cells. GLP-1 agonists such as semaglutide work like natural GLP-1, but are broken down more slowly and therefore have a much longer effect. The resulting effects include 20% fewer strokes and heart attacks, fewer chronic kidney diseases, less dementia. And from a cell biology perspective, we observe the following: neuroprotective effects, strengthening of mitochondrial function, this means our cellular power plants, and there is less oxidative stress.
Exactly. Alongside the GLP-1 agonists, there's been a lot of buzz around metformin. Originally a well-established diabetes drug, it's shown potential in extending life by improving mitochondrial function and reducing oxidative stress. We discussed this in our Future of Health report. Many researchers are looking at how metformin impacts age-related diseases.
Yeah, metformin is a classic example of a medication that has been repurposed in order to give general health benefits and not just to treat one disease. For 60 years, it has been used to treat diabetes, and it's a very cheap one because it's generic now. It's fascinating because it seems to target aging at a broad cellular level, and many studies are looking into this now, including a major FDA-sponsored study. Metformin acts as a fasting mimetic, meaning that it's imitating fasting effects.
Now, could you please explain to our audience, how does this mimicking of fasting work?
Oh, you like that, huh?
I love that.
Fasting mimetic means for the cell, there are fewer building processes, such as proteins or fats, and more breaking down processes because energy is needed. And the cells divide more slowly, produce fewer free radicals, and DNA repair has more time to work.
And these effects are currently tested in a large-scale phase 3 clinical study.
Exactly. Metformin is now being investigated for its longevity effects in the first large clinical study. TAME means Targeting Aging with Metformin. 3,000 people over 60 are taking part in the study over several years. These are high-risk patients who have not yet developed age-related diseases. They are looking at whether age-related diseases develop later under metformin. This would be the first evidence that the drug could support a cure of aging.
And as we all know, phase 3 studies are the last step of clinical development and are aiming for regulatory approval. Let's see if this third hurdle can be taken and how much time it is needed. Beyond the more mature class of diabetes drugs, there are other potent drugs which are currently repurposed and developed to interfere with critical pathways related to aging. Rapamycin is an interesting example.
Rapamycin is another repurposed drug for healthy longevity, which has emerged as one of the most intriguing drugs in the field of anti-aging research due to its potential to delay or reverse the aging process in research in mice. Developed as an immunosuppressant, rapamycin inhibits a protein called mTOR, which means mechanistic target of rapamycin in our cells, which plays a key role in cell growth, metabolism, and aging.
So what's the evidence in favor of rapamycin?
Research studies have shown that rapamycin can extend lifespan in several animal models, including mice. A notable 2009 study demonstrated that rapamycin increased the lifespan of middle-aged mice by 9 to 14% when started in late life. Similar results have been observed in other species, including flies and worms. Rapamycin's anti-aging effects are thought to be due to its inhibition of the mTOR pathway, because mTOR integrates signals from nutrients to regulate the cell growth and metabolism. By inhibiting this pathway, rapamycin may reduce cellular stress, may improve autophagy, which means the body's process of cleaning out damaged cells, and may enhance the body's ability to repair itself. All these effects are associated with slower aging and a longer health span.
This seems to be similar to what you just said about metformin.
But rapamycin works on a different pathway in the cell. And I'm sorry to have to emphasize this. The most recent major review study by Professor Andrea Meyer and her team from the National University of Singapore was unable to demonstrate any reliable longevity effects of rapamycin on people. Nevertheless, there is already a large global fan base that uses this drug off-label.
Sounds a bit like there's a bit of back of a fold, which is, by the way, typical for new scientific approaches and pharma research itself. Are there any related drugs maybe also interfering with the mTOR pathway, which are a bit closer to market?
One area of interest is the use of rapalogs, that means drugs similar to rapamycin. Some startups are developing mTOR complex 1 inhibitors because the mTOR protein consists of two complexes. If mTOR complex 1 is inhibited, longevity effects are seen. If mTOR complex 2 is inhibited, the opposite is true. Rapamycin inhibits both complexes. A molecule which is currently being developed only inhibits mTOR1 and should be more effective. And of course, it can be sold for a much higher price than a generic drug such as rapamycin. And in addition, the immune weakening effect of rapamycin should be lower, which would be really important to protect older people from infections in old age. And trials are also investigating the impact of rapamycin on Alzheimer's.
Nina, you've been quite active in covering some of the cutting-edge research that is still in early stages, but could have transformative effects. Now let's talk about epigenetic reprogramming.
Wow. Epigenetic reprogramming is being researched today with the help of Yamanaka factors. The Yamanaka factors were discovered by Shinya Yamanaka in 2006 and earned him the Nobel Prize in 2012. This discovery was pivotal for regenerative medicine, as it suggested that cells could be reset to a youthful, flexible state. There are four Yamanaka factors, which are transcription factors. They are capable of reprogramming somatic cells, means ordinary body cells, back into a pluripotent state, meaning they can become almost any type of cell in the body. The technical term for these epigenetic reset cells is induced pluripotent stem cells, iPSCs, which behave like embryonic stem cells.
Yamanaka factors are probably the most exciting kind of longevity drugs under development. Can you tell us, or our audience, a bit more how they work?
Okay, here are some of the ways Yamanaka factors are relevant for aging. Yamanaka factors reset the epigenome to young and to very young if they act on cells for a longer period of time. So you can rejuvenate cells outside the body, and today even inside the body, with these factors if they act for a strictly limited period of time. If you let them act for too long, the cell slips back almost to an embryonic stage and no longer remembers that it was and what it was, for example, that it was a liver cell. It would then no longer be able to perform its functions. That would be fatal. It is therefore crucial whether it is possible to introduce Yamanaka factors into the cells in such a way that they only act for a maximum 2 weeks. Then it is the point of no return and the cell becomes embryonic, forgets its functions.
So what you're saying is, if I understand you right, this technology also works outside the human body.
Yes, this works well outside the body. New young tissue can be grown from the iPS cells. For example, you take a skin cell. Allow Yamanaka factors to act in a petri dish for 2 weeks and multiply these rejuvenated cells. And with a special procedure, you can then turn these skin cells into muscle cells or pancreatic cells, for example, which you then re-implant into the patient. This time-limited process of cell rejuvenation is called partial epigenetic reprogramming.
So what happens if you do it is actually inside the human body?
Well, it seems even more spectacular if you carry out this process of partial epigenetic reprogramming in the living body itself. This means introducing the Yamanaka factors into the body cells, activating them for less than 2 weeks, and then switching them off. This is currently being worked on.
But the question remains, how can you control this process of epigenetic rejuvenation inside the body? How can you literally switch it on and off?
Yeah, the researchers use different transportation routes, let's say caps, to get the Yamanaka factors into the cells. There are viruses, special type, adenoviruses. There is mRNA. And there are also kind of tricky gene therapy procedures, which was used by the team of David Sinclair, Harvard Medical School, the superstar of longevity research, which has made blind mice see again. But this type of experiment is impossible in humans.
Although the potential seems to be immense, the clinical application of Yamalaka factors come with significant risk and challenges.
Yeah, you are so right. There is a lot. First of all, tumor development, teratoma tumors. If iPS cells are completely differentiated into specialized body cells, they do not develop teratoma tumors. But it has also been observed that teratomas rarely happen when one of the four Yamanaka factors is left out. So secondly, a major challenge with reprogramming cells is preventing them from losing their specialized function, such as neurons in the brain, for example, which could lead to loss of critical biological function. However, this only seems to happen if it's not possible to switch off the influence of the Yamanaka factors. And thirdly, safety and ethical concerns. Just remember, the long-term effects of cellular reprogramming on human health are still largely unknown. We also need to carefully consider ethical concerns regarding the manipulation of fundamental biological processes.
This is well understood, but regardless of this, the discovery of Yamanaka factors has opened the door to revolutionary possibilities for anti-aging therapies and regenerative medicine.
There's something to it. Early evidence, especially from animal models and preclinical studies, suggests that these factors can reverse certain hallmarks of aging, offering hope for rejuvenation of whole organs, for example. However, the journey from the lab to safe, effective clinical applications requires us to overcome some challenges. These include tumor formation, safety, and long-term stability of reprogrammed cells.
One product class which is supposed to be quite promising as well is senolytics. Can you tell me a bit more how they work?
Research on senolytics is still in the early stages, but preclinical and clinical studies are providing promising results. Senescence is a cellular program that, like so many others, has positive consequences in youth and negative consequences in old age. This shows us once again that evolution did not design us to live beyond 30 or 35 years. Senescence is a program that the cell activates when there is too much DNA damage or when there is another reason for acute cancer or other damage. In such a case, the cell stops dividing, swells, and begins to produce inflammatory substances. This attracts killer cells, and the cell is dissolved and removed. During aging, this pro-inflammatory cocktail, SASP, is produced on a massive scale, but the aging immune system is not longer able to eliminate the mass of senescent cells. This is suboptimal, so we have to kill senescent cells.
And indeed, there are several drugs in clinical testing.
Exactly. Several drugs have been identified as senolytics, targeting different pathways that allow senescent cells to survive. The Mayo Clinic in Rochester has successfully conducted human trials with dasatinib, a cancer drug, and quercetin, a plant-based active ingredient from smoke bushes and oak bark. Their approach is hit and run. Once a month for 2 days, fairly high doses, and then recovery. In total, 6 cycles. Some doctors and clinics are already using this off-label. But destroying all senescent cells carries risks. Senescence is not only bad, it can also prevent the development of cancer and promote wound healing. Destroying all senescent cells is not recommended.
And there's one more plant-based ingredient, fisetin, and one more repurposed cancer drug.
You are extremely well informed, Theo. Fisetin is another natural compound found in strawberries and now synthetically produced. Fisetin has shown potent senolytic effects in preclinical models. Fisetin treatment has improved lifespan and reduced senescent cell burden in mice without significant toxicity, making it a candidate for further human testing. And what you mentioned now, a very powerful drug, Navitoclax, was originally developed as an anti-cancer drug, and it has shown promise in clearing senescent cells in animal models. However, it carries some negative side effects, such as reduction in blood platelets and increased risk of bleeding.
Senolytics represent a cutting-edge approach to fight aging by targeting eliminating senescent cells for the moment.
Preclinical evidence in animal models and early human trials show that senolytics can improve health span and potentially delay or even reverse aspects of aging. However, challenges related to safety, long-term effects, and the potential for side effects need to be solved before these treatments can be widely used.
Maybe we should mention at this point that new therapies are also being developed in completely different areas. Give us a few more.
For example, mitochondrial transplantation procedures. Since our mitochondria never stop aging, the idea of growing young, healthy mitochondria and injecting them into a specific organ is intriguing. Or stem cell rejuvenation. Stem cells also age and produce fewer healthy cells, although millions of them are needed to grow every second. A startup has discovered a compound called casein, which could enable stem cell rejuvenation throughout your body when injected into the bloodstream. It's incredible. On the topic of old microbiome, the diversity of good intestinal bacteria decreases over the years. The number of bad bacteria increases. This has negative effects on the immune system, but also on the heart and brain. Several startups are working on new methods of transplanting young stool or young microbiome using capsules.
Speaking of breakthroughs, I know you've covered TACT.
TACT means TERT Activator Compound. In 2024, Ronald DePinho at the University of Texas and his team published a sensational study. TAC activated a silence gene which encodes TERT, and that ensures the production of telomerase, which lengthens the telomeres. The shortening of the telomeres, the protective caps of the chromosomes, leads to the death of the cells after about 50 divisions. This is a strong protection against cancer. But it is not good for older people because the stem cells are also affected. More and more cells therefore die or become senescent. Since telomerase is no longer active in almost all cells and only slightly active in few stem cells, nothing can be done to counteract this. The molecule TAC can now activate telomerase and gently keep the telomeres stable. Being gentle is important because too much telomerase can promote cancer. TAC was identified in a high-throughput screening of human cells among 653,000 compounds. Robots dripped the compounds onto the test cells and screened whether telomerase could be activated. 100 compounds were initially found. Then, after extensive testing, it was TAC. Incredible.
Amazing. Really amazing to see how these targeted therapies could reshape not just cancer treatment, but potentially the way we approach aging itself by targeting harmful cellular behaviors. We're definitely in an exciting era for longevity research. So let's talk about more accessible segments for consumers these days, nutritional supplements. I've seen studies suggesting that certain supplements may have a positive effect on longevity. What's your take here, Nina?
Yeah, I guess the different types of dietary supplements should be first clearly distinguished from each other. There are first the plant-based phytochemicals. These include well-known ones whose protective effects have been proven through long experience, not studies. They can be labeled and sold as traditional medicine. Other newer ones, such as resveratrol, astaxanthin, berberine, may not be labeled like this. They have anti-inflammatory effects, immune-modulating effects, etc. Resveratrol was hyped because it showed rejuvenation effects in cells in vitro, but it's not very bioavailable. However, there are now new processes to increase bioavailability. Liposomed or micellized plant-based active ingredients, or those coated with cyclodextrin, pass through the intestinal mucosa much better. However, there are no classic clinical studies for any of these active ingredients because these studies are far too expensive to be carried out for an active ingredient that cannot be patented. However, there are an enormous number of studies on the market, but they do not have this level of significance.
Well understood. But what about the traditional supplements such as vitamin C, D, omega-3 fatty acids?
You're absolutely right. Now we have classical dietary supplements with new findings. For example, the Do Health study on vitamin D and omega-3 fatty acids from the ETH in Zurich. 3,000 people above 70. Duration of the study was 6 years. The result? Clear insight in terms of reducing cancer by 61%. Every type of cancer. It has also shown promise in heart health and cognitive function, both critical for aging well.
And there's a group of endogenous human substances with new evidence, at least in animal models, which are directly linked to aging. Spermidin, taurine, creatine, NAD+, which needs a precursor such as NMN, because NAD plus is not bioavailable, and coenzyme Q10. We believe those compounds will find their place in the evolving market for supplements and consumer health products for healthy longevity. So finally, Nina, we can't talk about a long and healthy life without discussing the impact on lifestyle. Recent discoveries continue to show how factors like diet, exercise, stress management, play a huge role in how we age. What do you see as the most important aspects of a longevity-friendly lifestyle?
You love this topic, huh? These are the factors that grandma, I guess, always talked about. She said, eat more vegetable, baby, go to bed before midnight, and exercise, and don't stress. But today we know what these lifestyle factors do on a cellular level, if we follow them consistently. At the moment, they are the most important longevity boosters of all. You have to consider regular physical activity, above all, strength training, is essential for maintaining muscle mass, which declines as we age. A Mediterranean-style diet, rich in vegetables, healthy fats, and low carbohydrates, has consistently been linked to longevity. Reducing calories is the best method you can apply right now. Sufficiently good and deep sleep has enormously positive effects on the immune system, mitochondrial function, and dementia prevention, among others. And then there's the mental component, stress reduction through mindfulness, meditation, mental resilience, or even social connection is key.
I agree. In fact, social connections are a crucial factor that often gets overlooked. The research from Blue Zones
those regions in the world with the longest living populations shows that strong community ties and a sense of purpose are just as important as diet and exercise. Our research for the Roland Berger study also highlights how a well-rounded lifestyle can complement the more advanced medical therapies we've discussed today.
Exactly. In your life, all these lifestyle factors certainly should determine also your personal schedule. And while we've made incredible advances in therapeutic options and supplements, it's really about integrating these with everyday habits to support a long and a healthy life. But now I have a question for you as a management consultancy. You're working with pharma companies, payers, and providers in various strategy and transformational topics. What is your take on the business opportunities of agents that improve health span?
Thank you very much for this question, Nina. And it's not so simple, as many health-related market segments are heading to improve the health span, e.g. sports fitness industry. Basically, most of the available medicines approved for various conditions, many supplements, vitamins, mineral preparations. However, what we today have talked about, this is the market for medicines and nutritional supplements researched and positioned specifically for the extension of the health span. Hence, we're looking at three main markets. There's the traditional health market, with currently 12.5 trillion euro. Hard to imagine such a number, right? Secondary healthcare market, meaning private pay services and supplements, of 5 trillion euro. And there's this longevity market we talked about with new advancements of 30 billion euro. So this longevity market of 30 billion euro is the one we've talked about. So the 70.5 trillion market is about to grow until 5%. That's the traditional health and the secondary health market. However, growth of the narrower longevity health span market will be more likely 8% coming from a lower base. So in 2033, it will be at least 65 billion euros. But this is most likely a lower end scenario. It could be easily turn out to be much more billion euros.
And what will make the difference?
So the difference is that today, aging is not recognized as a disease. You got to have a condition to be treated. You have to have cancer, cardiovascular diseases, diabetes, Alzheimer's to be treated. Aging is not recognized as a disease because everyone is concerned. It is widely accepted, although as a matter of fact, it is the underlying disease of all the symptoms labeled as a disease today.
What would change once it is recognized as a disease?
If it is, and once it has been received a clear ICD code or something similar for a disease, then this market we would expect is going to have a lot of investment. Since the release of the ICD-11, effective since 1st January 2022, at least there's a code called old age or aging associated decline in intrinsic capacity, which, however, is not enough to make it a research focus, nor much easier for anti-aging medicines to get public reimbursement. In the light of that, what we discussed earlier on the repurposing of existing medicines and the discovery of breakthrough therapies under development, specifically for this indication, we could most likely see this code used and developing over time to a substantial therapeutic class. This would be the inflection point, which would push not only revenues of on-market drugs, but also investments into R&D. This would open up major opportunities for investors. Talking about investors, I know you have been recently traveling the US. What is your take on where the money comes from and goes to in terms of aging?
I have the impression that after the initial enthusiasm, there is now a certain degree of reluctance. Everyone is waiting for the first unicorn of the longevity scene, so to speak. The moment the first product shows clearly demonstrable longevity effects and sales soar, investors will become bolder again. longevity investments are currently still associated with high risk because all active ingredients and therapies that could have strong effects have to fight for approval. And as you know better than I do, that is so tricky. But market observers are absolutely certain healthy longevity, due to the rapidly aging population worldwide and the exploding healthcare costs, this will be the next big thing.
Absolutely right, Nina. In summary, we see five factors that make us confident it makes sense for many companies to invest into the emerging area of health and the increasing lifespan. First of all, there's an exponential growth already today. The longevity market, currently valued at $30 billion, is expected to double by 2033 across $60 billion mark. Investing in early stage companies focused on longevity products and services offer high potential returns as the market rapidly expands. Secondly, breakthrough research pipeline. 100 clinical studies initiated in the past 4 years, focusing on aging-related endpoints, there's a robust pipeline and innovative solutions. Investments in companies engaged in these trials or related platforms can provide exposure to breakthroughs in anti-aging therapies and products. Thirdly, platform evolution is driving innovation. The development of 12 major longevity platforms is accelerating the creation of new assets and treatments. By investing in platform companies or those leveraging these platforms, investors can capitalize on a continuous flow of novel longevity-focused products and technologies. Fourth, cross-generational demand for longevity solutions. The increasing demand for longevity products is supported by a strong societal drive for extended health spans, particularly among younger generations. Investments in consumer-centric brands in the healthcare, medical drug and nutritional supplement space promises sustained long-term growth. And the fifth aspect, we talked about this, the regulatory inflection point. The imminent recognition of aging as a disease will unlock new funding avenues, pushing longevity research into the mainstream. Early investments in companies positioned to benefit from this regulatory shift, particularly those who prepared for new levels of clinical and government funding, will gain first mover advantages in a dramatically expanded market. Nina, it's been a pleasure having you here and having the conversation with you today. We touched on so many important topics. Therapeutic breakthroughs, potential of emerging research, nutritional supplements, and of course, lifestyle. Thank you so much for sharing your insights.
Thank you, Thilo. It's been wonderful to dive into these subjects, and I hope our listeners take away some valuable information to help them on their journey toward a long and healthy life.
And for those interested in learning more, I highly recommend checking out Nina's platform, Stay Young, for the latest updates on health and longevity. And of course, you can find more business-related insights from the Future of Health study by Roland Berger, which is available on our homepage. Until next time, stay healthy and stay curious.
Thank you, Thilo. Stay young, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Business Insights by Roland Berger. Roland Berger is a leading global strategy consultancy. Our full-line service portfolio spans across all key industries and business functions. Established in 1967 in Munich, we are renowned for driving transformation, innovation, and business performance around the world. For more information, visit our website at rolandberger.com.